Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and today we are talking with two employment attorneys. That's right, two employment attorneys from the awesome law firm, Bernstein Schur, right here in Portland and also in Manchester, New Hampshire. We have Naomi Butterfield, and we also have Kai McGinty. Hello, both of you.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're going to be talking about some trends today and having to do with reducing risk about investigations. And so let me tell the audience right away that you're not going to fall asleep, audience, okay? Investigations are one of those things that people go, oh, my gosh, really? But in reality, it's critical, right? It's critical about how people strategically think about investigators. So let's set the stage if we can. We've talked before on the HR Power Hour about investigations, but we really haven't talked about the strategy behind it. So, Kai, could you take us through why to do an investigation to start with? Let's start at that point.
Sure. There are several reasons why you would want to do an investigation. And as you mentioned, David, reducing risk is the primary one. Investigations are done once a complaint gets brought, and you may not know that you have a complaint because it may not be in writing, it may not be a formal complaint, it may be a tip that comes into your office that there's some sort of wrongdoing occurring in your workplace. But at that point, light bulbs should be going off that this may be a trigger to conduct an investigation.
So, Naomi, what's your take on it?
Well, when you get a complaint or you get information that somebody's unhappy, feels discriminated against, feels harassed, has been a victim, you have a complaint, and that's all you have. Unless you do an investigation, you can't find out if it's true. And if you don't know if it's true, you can't make good decisions about what is the best strategy as an employer. So an investigation gives you actionable information that can help you as an employer make strategic decisions, and that reduces your risk. When it reduces your costs.
Yeah, when you're talking about reducing risk, reducing costs, a lot of employers would say, look, it's a small complaint. It's not a big deal. Do I really have to investigate everything?
Well, there is no one-size-fits-all investigation. Some investigations are smaller and some are larger. I think the question isn't usually, should I investigate, but it's what kind of investigation should I do? I think it is a failure that you don't want to make to not investigate at all. I say that not lightly, but sloppy investigations or a failure to do an investigation can be really costly down the road in ways you may not anticipate when you're making that decision.
So from a risk perspective, can you give an example of that?
Sure. From a risk perspective, if at the front end you think, well, we can negotiate this complaint, we can meet their needs in a way that just takes a redistribution or a reassignment of personnel, and that should solve it. But later down the road, if that same employee is upset about something else, files a claim with an administrative agency such as the EEOC, the EEOC will look back and say, you were already on notice. This employee filed a complaint earlier. Did you investigate it? And there the employer has exposure on the second claim. I would also add that there are often forums in which you don't anticipate having a claim where having had an investigation of the underlying complaint is helpful. For instance, employment security, if somebody is terminated as a result of a disciplinary action and there was an underlying complaint that you had failed to investigate, you may be left with exposure you wouldn't otherwise have had.
No, I think that's true. I think we're looking at trying to minimize risk for employers. But there's another side to this. And Kai, when we're talking about making sure that employers have a safe environment, that they foster a great working environment, investigations take an important role in that, don't they?
They do, David. I think an investigation showing that you have a culture where employees feel comfortable coming forward with their complaints, and on the other end of the coin, feel that if they are accused of wrongdoing, that there's going to be a fair process afforded to them by their employer before a decision is made about their employment. So a good investigation process, one that can be found easily in the employer's policies and that is conducted consistently, is going to encourage that kind of an atmosphere. And it's also going to encourage, as you mentioned, a safe working environment, because it gives the employer an opportunity to correct problems in the workplace before they escalate. And often, you know, if you have an atmosphere that does encourage complainants to come forward and to raise issues with HR and to feel that that those are going to be addressed, you can resolve them before they escalate to the level of an employee feeling that they have to bring a complaint at an administrative agency or in court.
You know, we're talking about making sure that employers have a good, you know, a really good understanding of the strategy behind investigating. But doesn't there have to be some legwork done before that? And so, Kai, talk to us about the policies, maybe the requirements by law that are required before you even decide to do an investigation. Or, hey, what if you don't have a manual? What if you don't have a policy? What can you just do one anyway?
David, those are really good points. I mean, first, with respect to policies, if you don't have policies about when you need to investigate a complaint, you should be thinking about having those, because there are certainly laws that require an investigation, laws related to sexual harassment, discrimination, retaliation, Title IX, which applies to educational institutions. All of those laws have obligations under them that an employer conduct an investigation once a complaint is brought under those laws. And often you can have policies that are even more stringent than your legal requirements that would require you to investigate certain types of complaints, whether that's workplace bullying or violence, drug and alcohol usage. And so you always want to make sure before when a complaint comes in to check your policy. Did you say you were going to investigate? It's even more important that you investigate those types of cases. And if you don't have policies about when you investigate, you should think about putting those into place, because you're going to have legal obligations regardless of whether your policy says you have to do it or not.
And I would add to Kai's comment that if you have a policy against, for instance, sexual harassment, and in your policy you encourage reporting and you state that you will take that complaint seriously, I think you have a policy that you're going to investigate. Because in order to take that complaint seriously and to move forward on that complaint or to take action, you are going to need to have done an investigation to find out if it's founded, and if so, what disciplinary action is required or what interim measures are required. So even in the absence of a statement in policy that you will investigate, I think it's implicit in both disciplinary policies and in non-discrimination and harassment and grievance procedure policies that an investigation is the procedure that you would use to determine if those are founded complaints.
Are in place. Yeah, absolutely.
I want to add one more point to just the policy discussion, because I also think it's important that your policies are clear, even if you have policies out there about when you're going to investigate, that it's clear how an employee brings forward a complaint, who's going to conduct the investigation, how is the investigation going to be conducted. Putting forethought into those policies are going to be really helpful in determining, you know, how you do the investigation and what employees can expect about how the investigation is going to proceed.
You know, we're talking about investigations, and we're talking with Kai McGinty and Naomi Butterfield from the Bernstein Shear Law Firm, both here in Portland and Manchester, New Hampshire. And we've been talking about these, you know, these key areas of why to do an investigation. I think what we're going to be talking about next, when we come back, is once you've decided to investigate, what do you do about it? You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step. Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan. Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan. Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan? I like bronze, like my tan. Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we are having a great discussion with two employment attorneys, Kai McGinty and Naomi Butterfield from the law offices of Bernstein Schur. You know, I had one of your colleagues on here a few weeks ago, now that I just think about it for a few seconds, right? Steve was on.
Steve from our Portland
office.
Yeah,
Steve Grolak. He talked about the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, it was so good that I had people say that actually people didn't fall asleep listening to it. So I thought that was good.
That's kind of his his claim to fame.
Yeah, no. There is no question he knew what he was talking about. So that's awesome. So we're now going to talk about, once you've decided to investigate, what do you do about it? Naomi, take us through a little bit, if we could, of, you know, the process, the goal-setting process. Tell me about what people have to think about, what the outcome should be in terms of, you know, the direction. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I always like to keep in mind that the goal of an investigation is to find out the truth. And an investigation is a tool. It's a tool to find out what happened so that you can make the best decision based on what you learn in the investigation. An important step towards that is defining what it is you're investigating. I know cost is very important to employers. A lot of people are worried about starting an investigation or doing an external investigation because they don't want to expend a large amount of resources to get there. I think defining the scope of the investigation really helps with controlling costs, because if you're clear about what the allegation is and what the investigator is investigating, you don't end up investigating the whole universe. So first is to determine what's the scope, what are you investigating. Secondly, I think you look at who is being investigated within your company, and those two help you define, should I just do this internally, or do I really need to go to an outside investigator?
You know, I do want to bring up one thing about cost, because cost is a factor in today's world a lot with a lot of employers. Does it have to be expensive, or you know, are there effective avenues for organizations to look at, or does it depend on the circumstance? I'm sure it does, but you know, what's your thought on that?
I have two thoughts on that, David. I think first of all, cost needs to be looked at in the overall picture. Is it an upfront cost that's minimal but a huge potential cost if you don't do it well? Or rather than just saying, I don't want to spend the money on the investigation on the front end, does that create an exposure that really is more costly in the long run? That said, no, it's not a one-size-fits-all. And there are ways that companies can look at managing the cost of an investigation. First, as I mentioned, defining the scope appropriately helps with the cost. There are some claims that can be done with an internal investigation, but here's the downsides to an internal investigation sometimes. If you're identifying someone in your organization, for instance, the HR director who might perform the investigation, you lose that person's skill set for the later discussion of analyzing the results of the investigation. Because as an investigator, they need to be impartial, unbiased, and they then can't participate in helping set the strategy for dealing with the results of the investigation. So I think it's critical for companies to think about how the cost to determine overall in terms of use of personnel, as well as just the cost of the investigation. I also think another very important criteria is if it is an investigation of a high-level employee or a manager, it's going to be hard internally to find somebody who can do the investigation without fear of reprisal, without bias, and without the appearance of either of those. Because sometimes even if it's a very clean investigation and there was no bias, there was no pressure on that employee to find a certain way, there may be the appearance that there was. And if that's the case, it's harder to have the investigation results accepted by all who really need to be looking.
Yeah, I think that's a critical part. Kai?
I have a good example from case law on exactly what Naomi's talking about in making those considerations about whether you want to have an internal or an external person conduct the investigations and what the risks could be to having an internal person do it. There was a case recently out of the district court in Massachusetts where an African-American man complained about race discrimination to his employer after he was passed over for two internal openings within his company and brought a complaint to HR. Two people from HR investigated, found that race was not a factor in the hiring decisions. And later on, the employee brought a complaint, filed a complaint in court. And in looking at the investigation, the court determined that the fact that one of the investigators who participated in the investigation was also the decision maker in the first hiring decision. And the court found that based on that alone, that was justification to throw out the investigation and had a significant risk to the organization in terms of legal costs and liability. So, by having your HR person, and HR people do, they have many hats. And so they're asked to do many, many parts of their job. And so, often these conflicts of interest are understandable, but they can have a significant risk down the road.
And I would add to that, I don't know any HR directors who have extra time on their hands. With all those hats, there are lots of demands, and it's critical that an investigation be timely. And by timely, I mean that it start quickly and that it be wrapped up in a reasonable amount of time given the scope of the investigation. It can really cost the organization in productivity, in morale, as well as just loss of the personnel time if an internal investigation drags on and on and on because the person investigating has 16 other things they need to be doing each day and managing each day.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I don't know a single HR person who's underworked, let's put it that way. You know, so let's make some assumptions for the next part here, which is basically that the organization has made a determination to go outside to get some assistance in terms of the investigation, that they're going to select an outside practice to do so. There are choices out there. There are firms that do it. There are individuals that do it. There are people who claim to do it. What are some of the criteria, or what are some of the things that they really need to be who to investigate for that firm? What are some of the things, Kai?
Well, I think it's important when you're looking for an investigator and a good investigator, first off, that you find someone who has the training and expertise to do it. There are a lot of people out there claiming to be investigators, but few who really have the training and expertise and experience. And that's going to be one of the criteria that's looked at later on in terms of the effectiveness of the investigation. So it's really critical when you're selecting an investigator that you make sure that they have the credentials to be investigating in your workplace.
Is there a list? Is there a preferred list of investigators in each state? Or is there anything like that that's out there that helps employers could go to this list? Like, you know, they have approved investigators by the whatever.
There's no certification out there for investigators. There are certainly professional organizations of investigators. Naomi and I are both members of the Association of Workplace Investigators, but there's no certification, which, you know, that's then anyone can say that they're an investigator, but there's a small cadre of people who are really have the experience and training to conduct them. And so those are the people that you want to be looking for and asking questions about their experience.
Naomi?
I would add to that that the term investigator is pretty broad, and you need to consider that these are workplace investigations for the most part. Occasionally, if there is a criminal charge that goes with it, you may have a corollary investigation by a trained law enforcement investigator. But I would distinguish between those two and also make clear that even if there is a police investigation going on to investigate the crime, there's a different standard that applies for whether or not it's a criminal investigation or whether you're enforcing your policies. And so the distinction I would make between investigators is you want someone with experience in workplace investigations, because your workplace investigation, even of a criminal matter, should be as to whether or not there was a violation of one of your policies. And that standard is going to be looser or less stringent than a criminal investigation, which is, as everybody knows from countless TV shows, beyond a reasonable doubt. A workplace investigation is preponderance of the evidence, which is really more likely than not. They're investigating whether there's been a violation of your policies. And that should happen whether there's a police investigation going on at the same time or not. And I think it's important to have an investigator who has a background in workplace issues, in your policies, and that may be a different skill set than someone who does different types of investigations, such as law enforcement. Both skilled investigators, but a slightly different skill set.
So those would be some of the characteristics, right, that you're looking for: experience, someone who understands the workplace part of the investigation part. Are there any examples which either one of you could give me on why it is so critical to find somebody in that type of role versus just an investigator off the street?
Well, I have an example of a case that I was involved in where the investigator really wasn't properly trained in how to conduct investigations. And this case involved a threat of rape, an allegation about a threat of rape made by a coworker of this complainant. And because I think that allegation was so shocking, that was really the only allegation that the investigator asked about. And there had been prior complaints that this complainant had made to other managers about other co-workers' offensive language in the workplace, vulgar comments, but she never explored any of those earlier allegations because she was so focused on the allegation about the threat of rape. And ultimately, that became a critical issue down the road and a big risk to that organization because the investigation really wasn't a thorough investigation. And again, the fundamental requirements of a good investigation are that it's prompt, that it's thorough, and that it's done by an impartial investigator. So ultimately, that's how the investigation is going to be judged. And in this case, there was a significant risk to the organization in the fact that this investigation really wasn't as thorough as it should have been.
Now, I can certainly see where the value of making sure that who's going to do this will represent your company. They're going to represent you not only in defending it, but in your reputation during the investigation itself, right? So, I mean, the questions you ask, the way you ask it, the tone, the inflection, all that is part of a reflection of the company and the values that the company has within it as well. Naomi, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would add also that there's a cost piece to this as well, in that if you have an untrained investigator, perhaps someone in your company who's available to do it but has never done one before, and in order to help that person through the process and make sure they're including all of the elements that you want them to look at, for instance, as in the example that Kai gave, that it was so limited that they missed a lot of the other issues, you may have that person consult with your legal counsel, and your legal counsel will help look at the notes from the investigation. Your legal counsel can help with the report writing. Your legal counsel can help with the standard and perhaps the elements of what you're investigating. But if you're using that counsel that extensively to support your internal investigator, you may end up spending more money than you would have had you hired an external investigator who was properly trained and able to do it with less scaffolding.
No, I mean, it certainly makes sense. We're talking to Kai McGinty and Naomi Butterfield from the law firm of Bernstein Schur. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan. Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan. Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan? I like bronze, like my tan. Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step. Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Our sponsors for today's show, AARP, taking on issues that matter.
Northern Insurance Group, meeting your business, commercial, and personal insurance needs. Sheehan, Finney, Bass, and Green, innovative approaches and practical solutions. And the law firm of Jackson Lewis, all we do is work. And we're having a great discussions here about thinking strategically about investigations, how we can reduce the risk, and kind of trending areas of the investigation, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. The other thing we're going to talk about today is Title IX, and I don't want to forget about that because that is, especially in the school area, a very important section that we want to recap it kind of at the end. So if you're from a school district, if you're interested in that, just know that that's coming up as well. All right, so we've been talking about why to do an investigation. We were talking about what to do once you have an investigation. We were talking about kind of if you're going to go externally and look for an investigator, what are some of the key things in terms of characteristics, experience that you're going out there and doing it. And next, we're going to really get into what does HR do if you do go outside, other than probably go back to doing the payroll and all the other things that they really should be doing in the first place. But what role do they play in it? So, Naomi, what's your take on that?
Well, I think it's critical when I come in to do an investigation, I like to have a contact person who's a neutral in the organization. Often the HR is the best contact person to have, and you really want to have a limited number of people that you're talking to, a limited number of people authorized to make changes to the scope of the investigation if they become necessary to authorize changes. I think it's also helpful to have HR as a contact person to get relevant documents assembled, not only the complaint, but handbooks, policies, if you have a collective bargaining agreement because you're a unionized workforce, employment contracts, if any, and personnel file. The HR person has a legitimate reason to have the personnel file, so I think that's a great choice. Also help with scheduling interviews. I think the HR person can add gravitas, can add credibility, and can set up the interviews as an introduction so that they run smoother and the employees have someone they can trust, and that they know that it's really coming from the organization and that they are asked to participate. The HR person also is in the best position to help implement interim measures if some are needed. The investigator can check in with the HR person. Obviously, the investigator, if they're an outside investigator, they're not making determinations about your company or about measures. But the HR person would meet with the rest of the executive staff as appropriate. So I think HR plays a critical role, and you lose that role if HR becomes the investigator.
When we're talking about things that can happen that are a problem, okay, so we'll call them pitfalls for the sake of argument here today. What are some of the things that can happen that HR or organizations, CEOs, managers can say, we got to make sure we don't do this? Kai?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, David. And actually, Naomi and I were just at a conference in California on workplace investigations where an investigator from the EEOC was present and gave us kind of her what she saw as the top mistakes that are made by employers when conducting an investigation. So I will impart that knowledge onto your viewers.
That's great. That's great.
First is that the company didn't investigate or didn't do a thorough investigation because the complaint wasn't in writing. It wasn't a formal complaint. It was a tip, or it came in anonymously. So the organization didn't feel that they had enough information to investigate on. That was the first
problem
right there.
Sure.
Because at that point, the employer's on notice or has reason to know about wrongdoing in their workplace, but hasn't gone the next step to investigate enough to find out the details, or at least as much information as they can to come to a finding.
Well, employers sometimes get told, hey, I'm telling you this, but I really don't want you to do anything about it.
Right.
And I'm not going to write it down. It's kind of, quote, off the record.
Off the record. There's right. No off the record for the employer. Right. It's the employer has the obligation. The onus is on the employer. Once, again, it has reason, it has notice or reason to know of a problem in their workplace. So certainly the utter failure to do anything is going to be problematic. The second thing is that the employer didn't investigate because the conduct occurred either after work hours at the conduct involved something that they might believe that has no connection to the workplace. But if it's going to have an impact later on in the workplace, if there are comments out there on social media that are going to have a significant impact on the workplace, harassing comments made by one coworker about another coworker that's going to impact the workplace, and the employer has that information, they need to move forward with an investigation to determine, you know, what took place. And the next one, which I thought was really good, because we all have this person in our workplace, and that's kind of the habitual complainer and not not following up on on information that comes to you by the person who is always complaining about something happening in the workplace, and just ignoring that, because this could be the one time where there's something that's a real issue in your workplace, and your failure to do anything about that is going to have a significant impact and risk to the organization. The other one, and we kind of talked about this earlier, was the scope of the investigation, that you didn't investigate allegations about religious discrimination because the focus of the investigation that you were conducting was about race discrimination, even though in the course of that investigation you learned that there may be a religious discrimination component to that, but you, as the investigator, ignored that aspect of the investigation. And again, that was an earlier case that I had that ended up costing the employer a lot in the end in settlement. So the other issue that she brought up, which she being the EEOC investigator that we listened to out in California, was an employer not wanting to ask witnesses questions about a conduct, an incident that took place, because they don't want to open the floodgates up to other complaints being brought by other employees where they may be experiencing similar types of problems. And that's simply not a reason to do nothing, because even if you have other complaints that are being brought by other coworkers, employees in your workplace, you want to know about them, you want to address them, you want to get to the bottom of them.
Now, those are great, and great tips to bring out for employers, because the reality is all those things happen. And certainly I know that in my HR world that is absolutely, I've heard all of them. Amazing. Every single one of them. Naomi, do you have an example that you could give of a success in which an employer came forth with a issue, it was taken to an external investigator, and that it worked out to be that, you know, it really was a success for the organization?
Yeah, I do. And I do want to add, we all have those experiences that Kai described, but organizations who see the complaint process as an opportunity to create a record that they took action are the ones that successfully negotiate their way through this sea of pitfalls. And the example I would have actually involved a frequent flyer, or someone who complained about many things. And they decided, well, we're going to keep taking these seriously, and we're going to just keep investigating. And in this one instance, there was a complaint of sexual harassment by a higher-level supervisor, and they brought in an outside investigator. The outside investigator, I think, was a good choice, not just because it was a higher-level executive, but also because of the type of allegation. Many people were embarrassed to talk about what had happened and actually had not been reporting because it was uncomfortable to talk to someone within the organization about the types of experiences they'd had. The investigation concluded reasonably quickly. It was not an investigation I did. It was an investigation I represented the company. And the employer was able to take appropriate action that really changed the morale of that department. A lot of the loss of productivity, the overuse of sick leave and absences, because people really felt intimidated and uncomfortable and afraid of retaliation, were improved by the action they were able to take based on the investigation. The one thing we haven't really talked about, but I think is a very important piece to keep in mind for employers, is the retaliation piece. We've been talking about the underlying claims, but Kai mentioned the discussion with EEOC, and one of the trends has been that often if employers don't act, don't investigate, and don't take the complaint seriously, that complainants may, even if the complaint was unfounded, had they done an investigation and determined that, that the retaliation that the complainants feel that they suffered as a result of complaining is the finding that ultimately exposes the company to costs and to settlements or to being on the losing end of a lawsuit.
Kai, do you want to expand on that a little?
I was just going to say that that's a really good point about retaliation, because I think those claims are often tacked on to an underlying discrimination claim. And ultimately, I think it's important to recognize that every investigation that an employer conducts could go to litigation. So you want to be thinking at the outset, how am I going to conduct this investigation so that if and when it ends up in litigation, it's going to be defensible and actually provide a defense to the employer to liability when that claim is brought. I read a recent study that U.S. businesses with at least 10 employees have a 12.5% chance of having an employment claim brought against the organization at some point. And it's much higher depending on the state. In California, I think it was like 42%. So, you know, these claims are brought frequently. It's what keeps Naomi and I in business. And
yes.
So you want to be, as the organization, you really want to be thinking about conducting the most effective investigation so that it does provide a defense to you when litigation arises.
Even though, you know, Kyla and I both like to be employed, really it's gratifying if we can be involved earlier, because we can really help the employer in a cost-saving way, because we're practicing preventative law. Investigations are part of that.
Absolutely.
So waiting and doing nothing and waiting to see if a claim is filed and then contacting litigation counsel is not the best risk avoidance strategy.
No, I completely agree. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step. Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan. Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan. Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan? I like bronze, like my tan. Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com, and we are talking with two great attorneys who have been absolutely wonderful for this segment, and that's Kai McGinty and Naomi Butterfield from the attorney firm of Bernstein Schur. We've been talking about investigations for the majority of this show, but there is some information that I know we need to get out in regards to Title IX and some new guidance issued in regards to Title IX. So, Naomi, can you first kind of give an overview about what Title IX is and about the cultural part of it?
Sure. Title IX was passed in 1972. It is monitored by, it's Title IX of the Education Act. It mandates gender equality in education. Many people have heard of Title IX as it pertained to athletics and spending on athletics. But in recent years, it has increasingly been the tool with which the Department of Education Office of Civil Rights monitors whether the universities have sufficient processes to deal with sexual harassment, sexual assault on campus. I think it's been increasingly in the news. There's increasing awareness of the problem of sexual assaults on campus, whether or not sexual assaults are increasing, or whether there's increasing support for reporting and for addressing assault and harassment. I'll leave to the experts on that. I will say that the Department of Education has issued, and the Office of Civil Rights within the Department of Education, has issued guidelines as to what they expect colleges and universities to have in place in order to address and to evaluate claims and to take action. And investigations are a big part of what are expected of universities and colleges, both as employers and as educational institutions for their students. And so it's part of the need to investigate complaints of sexual harassment, sexual assault for all employers, but it is particular to educational institutions that receive federal funds, which is really all of them, because federal funds include financial aid.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So, Kai, kind of take us through some of the new regulations, some of the things that are changing or applying today. Kind of give us a rundown of that, if you would.
Yeah, well, as Naomi mentioned, you know, Title IX has been in effect since 1972, and there's been some new guidance issued under Title IX, the Dear Colleague letter, and some subsequent guidance by the Office of Civil Rights that enforces Title IX. And it's created and expanded obligations for colleges and universities with respect to their policies and procedures related to sexual harassment, sexual assault complaints, their investigation procedures, and their grievance procedures on how they handle these types of complaints. Because clearly, I mean, you can't pick up a newspaper or go on CNN without seeing another campus that has been being investigated by the Office of Civil Rights for failures with respect to their procedures related to sexual assault and sexual harassment complaints. So it's clearly a major issue right now, and one that creates many challenges for colleges and universities in terms of compliance, because these are difficult cases and cases that often have a concurrent criminal investigation taking place at the same time that the university is under its own obligations to investigate these types of cases. So, and have a much lower burden of proof in terms of finding whether a sexual assault took place on their campus or didn't take place. It's a preponderance of the evidence standard, the same standard that's applied in conducting a workplace investigation, rather than that higher standard of beyond a reasonable doubt for a criminal investigation. So,
and I would say for the same reason, exactly what Kai was discussing, is that when there is an investigation, it's as to the violation of the college or university's policies prohibiting those actions. It's not in lieu of a law enforcement investigation if there is an assault. It's in tandem with.
No, and I think it's important that people are aware of changes that are happening out there. The reality is HR, as you both noted, has plenty to do, and especially even in the schools, they are, you know, they would say, overworked, underpaid, but they certainly have plenty of things to do, and they may not know of all the changes in the administration or the HR professionals that are there. So it's important for them to know. You both work at Bernstein Scher. How long have you worked at Bernstein, Kai?
I've been at Bernstein Scher 7 years. I was born and bred at Bernstein. came there right from law school, so and joined the labor and employment group over there, and it's a great group of people. We have 13 lawyers in our practice group, and often collaborate, work as a team. Many of us conduct investigations or oversee investigations for our HR clients.
Naomi, how long have you been there?
Well, I came a little bit more recently. I was general counsel. I was in internal counsel. And so I have been on the management side as well as on the outside counsel side. So investigations have been near and dear to me for a long time from both sides of the aisle, and I currently am part of the Labor and Employment Group in New Hampshire, where I represent nonprofits, corporations, as well as educational institutions as part of that Labor and Employment Group. And it is a great group. It's been a great association for me.
No, that's fabulous. I want to thank both of you for being on the show today and appreciate your oversight on this very important issue. And I think HR professionals can have a lot of takeaways in terms of how to handle these in the future. Certainly after this show, if you go to the HRPowerHour.com website, you'll get to see these young ladies and have a link to directly to both of them. Also, the bios would be there, and certainly a taping of this show will be available right after the show today. So thank you very much to both of you for being on the show.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David.
David, we also have a guide on our website about how to select an investigator and the considerations that an employer would want to take into account in that process. So
we will make sure that that link is on the HR Power Hour website as well. So we'll make sure. Absolutely. We'll make that happen. Well, you guys have been great. I appreciate it. Thank you for both being on the show today.
Thank you very much, David.
And now the HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group. Licensed agents in 28 states, business, commercial, and personal. Go to northerninsurancegroup.com. Special guest today, Naomi Butterfield from Bernstein Scher with your Tip of the Week.
I would suggest that all employers start thinking about whether they have or should have a social media policy. A social media policy shouldn't just be a list of what not to do, but also how your company can benefit from its presence in social media, how you regulate and control that presence in social media, and then most importantly, how your employees want to conduct themselves on social media to meet your company's mission, goals, and culture.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week. Sponsored by Northern Insurance Group at northerninsurancegroup.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have a national guest, Betty Francis. She is the Vice President of Human Resources for the Wilmington Trust Wealth Advisory Services in Delaware. She's going to be talking about how to be an HR influencer. HR today is complicated, but you have to make a difference in what you do. And it's all about you influencing others to get what you need and also what the organization needs to make the culture right. So listen to Betty speak about it on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.